My guest in this hour is not here to talk about the earthquake per se, but I can't help but ask her about it. Linda Springer is a former controller at the Office of Management and Budget and a former OPM director. And it's great to have you back in the studio. It's good to see you again.
You are
used to being in that chair from your tenure at OPM where something happens, not necessarily an earthquake while you were there, but decision-making happens really, really quick in these kinds of things, doesn't it?
It does, and it's interesting to watch in this case because it seems that individuals probably made some decisions on their own as well.
Mm-hmm.
Earthquakes aren't something that are practiced the same way fire drills are, and when we look back at what happened today, I think there will be some review on whether the response was the right one.
Mm-hmm.
People leaving buildings, going outside. We talked a little bit with your prior experience living in California, how that might have been something a little bit different than what you would expect if you were experienced with being in an earthquake zone. I think there will be some learning that will come from this, and fortunately and hopefully there weren't any injuries or any problems that we'll find as a result. But it is something that doesn't get quite as much attention as some of the other things like fire drills, like some of the other snow day or other types of weather-related events that are more carefully probably planned for.
Yeah, snowstorms and things like that are predictable. I'll be real honest. That's the reason, earthquakes are the reason that I left Southern California after 3.5 years and came back to the East Coast. I'm from Pennsylvania originally. And I just didn't care for the unpredictability of them. And that's what we experience today. A snowstorm, well, we're thinking now and potentially planning for Hurricane Irene. That is right now based in the Caribbean, and we're looking at how that might come up the eastern seaboard. And we have an opportunity to think about that and plan for it, that if this happens, we want to do this, or if this happens, we want to do that. And that's not something you have the opportunity to do. It's a lot more reactionary in earthquake situations. And we saw that today. Folks here did the same thing that I did the first time that after I moved to LA, that there was an earthquake. They ran outside, which is the worst thing that you can do because if something's shaken off the side of a building, it could fall on your head. So I was standing in a doorway and yelling to my coworkers here, don't go outside, don't go outside, stand in a doorway. So it's just interesting to see those reactions and think about the way people respond viscerally rather than the protocols in this case just don't matter, do they?
It seems like it almost validates the need for practicing and rehearsing and drilling on the right response to a particular type of event.
Mm-hmm.
And there are only so many as a practical matter of those that you're going to do.
Yeah.
Certainly, we practice the fire drill, and I keep coming to that because that's the one that we all do. We're going to have a fire drill at church on Sunday morning.
Yep.
And those things are ones that almost reflexively take over. You know, something bad happened, I've got to leave the building.
Mm-hmm.
And in some cases, that's the right thing to do. In some cases, it isn't. So I'm sure, again, there will be some learning that comes from this and some additional direction and maybe some practicing on what to do or what not to do in the case of an earthquake. And maybe that'll open up an expansion to cover and to review the protocol for other types of things as well.
All right. Thank you for that insight. It's a wonderful situation that you're here to talk about that kind of thing on a day like today. But you're actually here to talk about another earthquake, and that is the budget earthquake that the federal government is starting to experience. I have a sense that in the federal government, it is about comparable to what we were feeling at about 1:54 today, where the building first started to move, but we hadn't yet felt the full force of it. That's the sense that I have about where we are in the federal government based on the memo that Jack Lew put out on Thursday. And we talked a little bit before we went on the air about the blog post that he then put up on Friday afternoon. And, you know, Friday afternoon, the last Friday in August, or third Friday in August, doesn't really get a lot of attention. Anything that happens doesn't get paid a lot of attention. But some of the things that are going on are fascinating to me because of what isn't being said, and we'll explore that a little bit more throughout the course of the hour. Though, let's pull back, though, and think about your role as a financial and budgeting leader, the time you spent at OMB as controller, and the other experience that you have along those lines. What are your thoughts about what a CFO at an agency is really thinking through and working through right now?
The federal CFOs today have to be thinking that they're in a different time and a different place than they were in that role 2, 3, 4 years ago. Things used to be somewhat predictable. You had a year's budget that was already passed or maybe close to being passed. Maybe some would carry over into a continuing resolution for some period of time. But there was a little bit more of a continuum. And what the exercise was to determine what that next year on the continuum would look like.
Mm-hmm.
There were some parameters. There was information that was given in direction along a predictable time frame. Outside of D.C., it was a very limited set of spectators who were informed and were trying to put pressure to bear and weighing in. And so it was really more a matter of how do you continue to fund the ongoing operations of your agency and to reflect and fund appropriately the initiatives of that administration.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that that has been shaken, if you will, not to use maybe an,
you're so clever,
an
Linda.
Artful,
that's
yeah,
a nice one.
But you know, thinking about the earthquake today, I think that there are some tremblers, I guess, that have sort of working their way through. If the experience we had last year with kind of the brinksmanship on the fiscal 11 budget, potential shutdown. At the same time, all kinds of other impacts or potential impacts to the workforce, even the workforce that works on the budget.
Mm-hmm.
Early outs being approved for, I think, somewhere around 14 agencies now.
And nobody's been declined. I mean, every agency that's asked OPM for that authority has they've gotten the go-ahead. They've gotten the thumbs up to do whatever they've asked to do.
Mm-hmm. It seems that way. So I think that, you know, one thing that is certainly different and has got to be factoring into how did the CFOs put together this budget. It's not optional. And certainly these early passes, I think there's an expectation that this is just round one.
Mm-hmm.
And the 5%, the 10%, I think those are just initial steps. It's just my opinion. But, you know, you would have to think that CFOs are thinking about how do we get this done? What are the parameters that we use? And certainly realizing it's not the same as it was several years ago.
I mentioned that there were some things that I noticed that weren't written that I took away from some of this budget conversation. I want to get your thoughts on one of those ideas when we come back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Linda Springer's my guest. She's with Ernst & Young, the former OPM director and OMB controller, and we'll continue our conversation in just a moment.
Mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
The General Services Administration says the section of its website that includes information on per diem reimbursement rates is among its most highly trafficked. So the agency decided to create a mobile application to display the same information. It includes government reimbursement rates for lodging, meals, and incidentals. The agency is exploring the idea of letting the app automatically detect a user's location and provide local rates. It's available for iPhone and BlackBerry right now. Android is next.
General Dynamics Information Technology is dedicated to providing the latest, highest quality information technology services and resources to help organizations meet their mission objectives. Large-scale IT systems and communications networks are the strategic and operational heart of defense, intelligence, civilian government, and private business. They require the expertise of a company that delivers results. General Dynamics Information Technology and professional services. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com.
If you're in federal IT, CDWG has the people and products to seamlessly integrate all your communications into a single, unified, accessible communications network. So if your employees are scattered hither and yon, visit CDWG.com/unified. We'll make it seem like they're all hither, not yon. CDWG. People who get it.
Visit CDWG.com to learn how scalable Cisco switches can help improve collaboration by seamlessly connecting your communications.
I'm like you. I watch the cherry blossoms bloom in the spring. I live amongst monuments and museums. I enjoy walks on the National Mall. Washington, D.C. is my home. This is where I found my career. I am a civilian employee of the United States Coast Guard. That's right, the Coast Guard. The Coast Guard provides me with great workplace training and excellent federal benefits. It allows me to live my life to the fullest. I have time off to travel and have flexible work hours so I can spend time with my family. Coast Guard gives me access to childcare, health and fitness programs, and first-class health insurance, life insurance, and retirement benefits. This is my career. It's how I serve. Find out more about U.S. Coast Guard positions available in D.C. and across the U.S. at CoastGuardCivilian.com/federal. That's CoastGuardCivilian.com/federal. The U.S. Coast Guard is an equal opportunity employer.
I'm Amy Morris. Here's a look at Wednesday morning's Federal Drive. When Congress returns, lawmakers must take up a balanced budget amendment, even as it seeks to trim the budget by more than $1 trillion. We'll get logistics from the Hill. And what are some of the management lessons after 9/11? We'll talk with John Palaguta with the Partnership for Public Service as part of our ongoing series, 9/11, A Government Changed. That and more Wednesday morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Did you know Federal News Radio can also be heard on 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland? Check it out the next time you head to Fort Detrick or the I-270 Technology Corridor. Tune in to Federal News Radio for the latest news and information about the federal government and the federal contracting world. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM or 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. Federal News Radio, your source for federal news now.
Back on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Linda Springer of Ernst & Young, the former OMB controller and director of the Office of Personnel Management. And budget matters, of course, in the limelight because of not only what's going on just generally, but specifically the memos coming out of OPM on Thursday and Friday. And even there were some parallels or some connections people are drawing to some of the performance measurement stuff that came out the end of last week and that we're expecting to see more of this week. That's budget-related too, Linda, and we'll talk about that later on in the show. But we've been talking about the 5% and 10% numbers that came out of these. I thought it was interesting that on Friday, Jack Lew posted a blog post on the OMB's blog about that was kind of a reshaping of that 5 and 10% number where he said, not every agency will be cut 5%. Not every agency will be cut 10%. And he reinforced the idea that these aren't across-the-board cuts, that these are top-line cuts. But I had an interesting conversation with somebody yesterday who was saying, you know, if there's if you have one budget document that says these are our cuts if we go 5%, we have another budget document that says these are our cuts that we go 10%, wouldn't the tendency be at the OMB level or at the CFO level to go right to the 10% cuts first and then say, I wonder if we can live with these, and if we can't, then we'll look at the lower number? That's my take as a non-financial person. Is that a reasonable way to look at it, do you think?
It's not unreasonable. There's always, I think, in this environment, people would say, is 10 even enough in some cases?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that the 5 and the 10 just will provide a different list or a different extent to which for the same item you would go. And then tying that to performance, what are the ramifications? Does it delay some outcome that's important that may even save money and make the organization more efficient? So I think there's some perspective of that you get by doing both. At the same time, one has to ask the fair question, I think. If the patient comes in to the doctor and presents themselves as, you know, I weigh 300 pounds, you
right.
know, you get off the scale and it's 300, and you really should be, for your body type and size and all those things, 150.
Mm-hmm.
So fight, and the doctor says, well, okay, we're going to ward off these bad health implications if you stay at 300 and your life expectancy impact, and we're going to start a program of reduction, and so you're going to cut 5%. I want you to lose 15 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you lose 15 pounds, you're still 285 versus the 150 you should be. And we'll say, well, we'll go to let's go to 10%. If you lose 10%, well, that's 30 pounds, so now you're at 270. And I understand that you need to start somewhere, but is there another approach, perhaps, that might make more sense? We've talked in the past about going back to really the basic fundamentals. Some people might call it a version of zero-based budgeting.
Mm-hmm.
But what do you really need to do as a federal agency? What's mandated by law, by constitutional, you know, directive or other lights-on type things? And then build up from there. And performance is one factor. When you look at those other not just must-do but should-dos, then you say, are they performing well? Can they perform well and achieve outcomes and build up? So it wouldn't surprise me at some point if, yes, the 5 and the 10% options become two of a whole range of types of budget possibilities that an agency, once as they go through the congressional process and so forth, ultimately are asked to provide.
There is some, I think your analogy of the guy, and by the way, I weigh about 300 pounds, so I'm not sure what message you're trying to convey there.
It's someone who's a lot shorter than you are, Francis.
Okay. All right. Nice backtrack. I appreciate that. But I think that analogy is great. I wonder, though, if there and the dynamic there is correct, too. That person needs to be that weight. But I wonder if there's not some value in, as you said, starting someplace and in being that person gets to the 5 or 10% weight reduction. They can say, wow, I can really do this. I think there's a sense right now at agencies that we can't cut 5%. 5% is really going to make us, it's really going to affect our mission critical areas. 10% will really be difficult. And I wonder if there's not an attempt on the part of OMB to let agencies do this themselves so that they can say, okay, we did get to 5% less than our top line, because the measure is off of enacted 2011 budgets. We really can do this, and it's not what we'd like, but we're still going to be able to do everything that we absolutely have to, and that becomes that starting point that you alluded to.
I can't say what his overall game plan is.
Sure.
And what the momentum or the path is that this puts the agencies on in OMB's overall ultimate goal of getting to a budget that they feel should be recommended, the president's mm-hmm. budget. I would say, though, that agencies and CFO organizations have been pretty well taxed over the past few years, and they only have so much bandwidth to keep going back and running new budgets. So you'd like to think that there would be some acknowledgement of that and not just a continual stream of, well, now let's try this one. Well, mm-hmm. you've done in the five and the 10. Well, let's now do another one, and let's do another one. It's at some point, I think there's some fatigue and stress on the organization. So you'd like to take them at their word that the 5 and 10 are serious budget options. But certainly I think one would be surprised if it stopped there.
I have heard from some folks who obviously didn't want their names attached to their comments that comments to the effect that it sure would have been nice to hear this in July. And I imagine a lot of that schedule on OMB's part was driven by the debt limit conversations and so on, because you didn't really know where you were going to be at that point.
That's true. But, I mean, you know, look, I don't think anyone would have been expecting that there wouldn't be some cuts. So there's no reason, I think, that to OMB's defense that anyone should have been in a holding pattern waiting for this to come. I think that there's a lot of analysis that can be done in advance. One of the things that, you know, in my current firm that we talk to agencies about is that very approach of categorizing and bucketing your expenses between those that are associated with the must-do type programs and requirements, then second bucket, the should-do, and then the nice-to-do.
Mm-hmm.
And doing that, and if there was nothing stopping anyone from doing that, and it would be reasonable to have started to do that, mm-hmm. and then just take from what you've learned and meet the OMB requirements.
Yeah. When you were here the last time, you talked about that matrix, and I want to go back to that and kind of revisit it when we come back from the break. My guest is Linda Springer of Ernst & Young on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll continue our conversation in just a moment.
See more, do more, get more. HP Notebook PCs powered by Vision Pro technology from AMD simply deliver more. Graphics made incredible, multitasking made easy, high performance made possible. Designed with HP mobile innovations that let productivity happen anywhere, anytime. Notebooks built to handle big demands. Price so your budget can handle it. Give your agency the power of HP and AMD. To find out how, go to hp.com/go/perform.
I work to help our nation, and my work makes an impact. I help my government and our allies keep citizens safe from terrorism and cyber warfare. I work for ManTech International Corporation.
Around the world and at home, ManTech employees work side by side with our troops and government to protect our homeland. We have more than 10,000 professionals doing rewarding work every day. If you're an IT professional, security expert, intelligence analyst, or engineer, apply today at mantech.com/careers.
To win and deliver government contracts successfully, you need to align with the right teaming partners. Meet Tech Systems. While often behind the scenes, Tech Systems has worked with government agencies and systems integrators for over 25 years. In fact, every year, they deploy over 70,000 IT professionals at over 5,500 client sites nationwide, including more than 65 government agencies. Tech Systems is active across a broad spectrum of government programs and has developed deep relationships who understand what works well and who does it best. Thinking about cybersecurity, working on a cloud computing initiative. Tech Systems addresses critical program gaps related to people, projects, and work functions. Their delivery models scale from staff augmentation to IT project and outsourcing services to support transition, ramp-up, surge, and ongoing program support needs. Learn more at TechSystems.com, TechSystems.com.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy?
For freedom.
Freedom of religion.
What America stands for.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy? For honor.
Everybody. And watch out for everybody.
Freedom to vote.
Democracy.
Freedom to go outside and play with my kids.
I joined the Navy to serve my country.
Every freedom that we have.
The right to raise our kids in peace.
My little brother.
My wife. My kids.
Our children's children.
The United States Navy.
It's not for ourselves alone that we serve.
Kids and concussions. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. Children account for 90% of hospital emergency room visits for sports-related concussions. Analysts with HHS's Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality, or ARC, found this in the agency's 2008 Emergency Department database. ARC's Claudia Steiner says people treated for concussions commonly had other injuries, generally less severe ones like pulled muscles, but sometimes more severe, such as skull fractures. About 12% experienced a moderate or prolonged loss of consciousness, and 21% experienced a brief loss. And Steiner says,
fortunately, only a small percentage of those treated for sports-related concussions in the emergency department had to be admitted to the hospital.
Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
The Federal News Radio Community Spotlight for August is Vehicles for Change, a nonprofit organization repairing and providing donated cars to low-income families. A car is the most valuable poverty-fighting tool that can be provided to a low-income family, and Vehicles for Change has awarded over 3,500 cars since 1999. The car increases the opportunity for better employment and family activities never before possible. To learn more, visit federalnewsradio.com. This message is brought to you by Papa John's and Federal News Radio.
Headed to Fort Detrick or the I-270 Technology Corridor, Federal News Radio can be heard crystal clear on 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. It's the same great station, just on an added frequency. Get the latest news about the federal government and government contractors. Hear exclusive interviews with the movers and shakers in the federal arena. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM or 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. Federal News Radio, your source for federal news now.
Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Linda Springer of Ernst & Young is my guest, talking about the budget situation that we're in and the decision-making process that's going into that budget-making at each of the federal agencies. And you were here, it's been a couple of months back, and we talked about a matrix, a decision-making matrix that you and some of your colleagues have worked on and developed. And I thought this was really interesting because anytime I think that you can automate a process or add some level of automation to a process, it seems to me to be more efficient. It seems to me to be faster because there's a little less argument about what things are and how things should work. And the discussions and arguments can be directed toward the prioritizations and assigning each of the items into the categories of these matrices. You've got four steps in this process that you outlined before. Let's just run through them real quickly and then talk about how this process might have changed or accelerated or evolved since you were here before. The first portion of this is assigning whatever it is that your agency does, each of the tasks that the agency does, to one of four categories. What are those four categories?
Well, yeah, the first thing, actually, in the first step, of the four, there are three buckets. There's the assigning mission criticality. Mm-hmm. Step one, is it something you must do, you should do, or just something you like to do?
Mm-hmm.
That's a starting point. And this is all about categorization so that you can get your arms around the universe of this big sea of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Second step of the four is, and this ties in, incidentally, with the GPRA memo that came out about tying performance to what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
You're looking at the level of performance, meeting objectives, high, medium, low.
Yeah.
So for each of those, do I have now a must-do type thing? I need to do this to be in compliance. However, I'm only kind of average at performance. That might be one, for example, where you'd invest a little bit, because
mm-hmm.
getting to that next level of performance might actually be a good thing. On the other hand, maybe it's not something that, if it's a low performer but a like to do, then you'd say, That's something that is not likely to get the funding.
Now, this seems to me to be where the first arguments will happen. I imagine that they're probably, if you have people in leadership at the agencies who are really honest with themselves and honest with each other, it's probably not hard to do the categorization by mission criticality. I think mm-hmm. I would imagine most people at agencies are really aware of the things that they're doing and whether they are mission critical, should do, or like to do. Is that fair to say, do you
yes,
think?
Yes, I think it is.
Okay, so then when you start to rank the performance of each of these things, I would imagine that's where the argument comes. Because what happens if you have something that is a should do, which is the middle priority, but it's a very high performer, as opposed to a mission critical element that maybe is a low performer? Prioritizing those dollars just among those two is probably where the fights start, isn't it?
It's the more difficult part of the effort. And that's where agencies have to decide if they can be an honest broker. Is there someone in the agency who really can objectively probe the performance recommendation that's given, or do they need some sort of outside objective party to do that? But, you know, and the other thing is to avoid the temptation of letting this take on a life of its own, because
mm-hmm.
that's the last thing you want to do.
Yeah, that's the worst outcome that would seem to me.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, again, having the discipline to not only be objective, but to keep maintaining momentum in this process. There are existing artifacts for many of these things. Some of them aren't maybe as obvious as some sort of dashboard or metric, but it might be, are there historic cost overruns? Are there duplicative functions?
Mm-hmm.
Are we using obsolete technology? So there are a number of things that you can do to determine pretty quickly if something is performing at the highest level or not.
Mm-hmm.
And again, they aren't always as apparent when you live that close to them if it's your project.
Right.
And that's where, you know, there's a need to, again, preserve objectivity. One way to do that is to start by saying, show me why this isn't a low performer. Or if you say, well, start at medium, prove to me why it's high. The natural inclination is to put everything at the high level and then have to defend it or show why it's not. So there are a number of ways where I think you can develop a culture around doing this. But again, avoid the temptation of it becoming, you know, a major project unto itself.
But as soon as you use the C word, culture, I leap immediately to culture at agencies is not easy to change at all. It's really difficult. You know that better than most.
Sure, it is. It is. And it takes really some way. Well, it's going to be one of two things. It's either going to be thrust on you or you're going to be able to, you know, have the leadership that's going to say, we just need to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And because, again, the 300-pound person isn't going to lose. It's not going to fall off, you know, if you keep sticking to the culture that you've been on.
Right. That's a very good point. Doing the same thing and expecting different results was, I think, Einstein's definition of insanity. All right. So the second element of your process there is assigning each of your functions that that level of performance, high, medium, or low. And then the third one is?
Step three is to actually assign the time frame associated with achieving savings reductions for each of those buckets or each of those elements, items in the bucket. So is it something where the agency has the autonomy to take an immediate action? So the immediate categorization. Near term, we, you know, identified as something longer than that, maybe up to a year, but it might be involve some simple rulemaking or some non-controversial change.
Mm-hmm.
Midterm or distant are things that would take legislative action that might be more controversial that you couldn't just on your own as an agency go out and affect change. And that factors into that decision process of, you know, again, let's say it's a ripe candidate based on the first two steps, but if it's something that's near term, it's a different answer than if it's something that's more distant.
Mm-hmm.
So that's step three in the process.
All right, we'll get to step four when we come back with Linda Springer of Ernst & Young on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Our conversation about budget decision making rolls on in a moment.
Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit, presented by NITP, has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit, Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future. You can't build a house without a strong foundation, and you can't build a truly efficient data center without storage efficiency. If you're in federal IT, you know the importance of operating as efficiently as possible. NetApp storage is flexible, easy to manage, and requires far less hardware, often only half as much. IT efficiency starts with storage efficiency, built on NetApp. And delivered by NetApp partners like Thundercat Technology. To get efficient now, visit netapp.com/federal.
Listen to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, every Friday morning at 11, brought to you by the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth. Fed Talk features live interviews with guests from the federal community sharing their insights on issues that affect you. Call in or email questions or comments to fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. Fed Talk is sponsored by GEICO. This week's host, Deborah Roth, is joined by MSPB Executive Director Steve Lenkart and MSPB Director John Crum to discuss the latest issues facing the agency.
Newsmakers talk to Jason Miller on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Beth McGrath, DOD's Deputy Chief Management Officer.
Secretary Hale and I, we're doing the evaluation piece, if you will, of the efficiencies. Once the efficiencies were identified and booked in the budget, we're doing the follow-through to say, well, you know, what's your plan to get there? And then we'll be tracking and monitoring those as we go through the 12 fiscal year.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Linda Springer of Ernst & Young, and we're talking about making budget decisions and figuring out a strategy when it comes to meeting OMB guidelines for the 5% or 10% or whatever the cuts wind up being. And you're walking us through your four-step process. The first step is determining the level of criticality for agency, whether it's mission critical, something you should do, or something that an agency would like to do. The second is assigning a performance level to each function, a high, medium, or low performance. And then the third step, we talked about the speed of savings and how fast you can save the money that has been that you've determined you're going to be able to save by making whatever cuts you're going to. And the fourth step then is what?
Well, the fourth step is really more of an administrative one, but you actually need to gather the right costs, the right data to put against each of those programs, because you're evaluating it not so much on the dollars themselves up till now, but really more on the effectiveness or the criticality and the time frame for the savings. So now you're saying, okay, what actually are the dollars associated with each of those?
Mm-hmm.
And in some cases, you'd actually need to add some indirect costs that might go with it. So it's, you know, if it's the type of thing that is $1 million versus $100 million, then that might have some bearing as well in your decision-making.
Mm-hmm. All right. That's the same discussion that we had. We talked about that earlier. Now, when you were here before, at least the atmosphere seems like we were in a different time almost a couple of months back. The debt ceiling discussion changed, I think, everybody's approach to what the budgets are going to look like for the foreseeable future. The Congress has not yet done anything on FY 2012. We're almost at the end of 2011, so it looks like we're back in potentially in CR territory, because by the time Congress comes back, it'll only be about 3 weeks until fiscal year 2011 ends. Do any of the events of the past couple of months change the way that you think agencies should approach using this matrix?
The approach, I think, holds up very well. I think it gives a greater sense of urgency and it supports this type of approach. I think there are some who say, well, this seems rather straightforward, simple, direct. Doesn't have all the complexities that we're used to in a lot of our government work. But the reality is, if we do need to do repeated passes at the budget, this is the kind of approach that would hold up very well. And you do see some elements of this in some of the comments that CFOs are making. And obviously, we like to think that some of our conversations with some of those people have, you know, been helpful to them. But I think we will not have the luxury, or federal CFOs will not have the luxury of going back to basic principles for all of these passes. There will be a need for, I think, rapid response, particularly when you start to deal with Congress. And think about this, too. We're talking about the fiscal 13 budget.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first budget in the post-presidential election period.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's a current administration, a new administration, there is certainly the potential for different presidential priorities,
mm-hmm.
Regardless of whether there's a change or not. So it's an interesting backdrop to this particular discussion as
mm-hmm.
well.
Think back, if you can, to what was going on in government around the 1994 election and the 96 election. It seems like it could be maybe a similar situation. The President Clinton at the time was trying to reduce the size of the federal government. We had the drawdown in defense because of the attempt, at least, to try to realize a Cold War, post-Cold War dividend, a peace dividend. So there are some parallels there to a degree. It's not quite the same, but and then the presidential election dynamic thrown in there, and the political dynamic with the change in control of Congress after a long period of time. When you're thinking about budgeting, do any of those things make a difference, or are you really just focused on the raw numbers that you have to deal with right in front of you?
The CFO role at different agencies varies. There's some CFOs that are very much a part of those types of discussions.
Mm-hmm.
That are more far-ranging, that related to policy and strategy and multi-year horizons and the broader environment. There are other agencies where the CFOs are very financially focused and focused on getting numbers to support those types of discussions that others have. So I think there's a spectrum and it varies. There's no shortage of perspectives. But one of the roles that I think is helpful or particularly important for the CFO to play in all of this period will be to keep people on point and to make sure that the data that the CFO does provide is reliable and credible. And again, that places another burden on the CFO shop. I think our CFOs are up to it.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're very good at what they do. But there will be more pressure, I think, in this period than there's been, even more than last year or the year before, just because of all of these other perspectives and the environment that we're in, and certainly moving into an election period.
You kind of anticipated my next question, which was going to be, do the CFOs have the tools that they need, regardless of what their role is in the agency, to be able to provide what's needed for the decision-making process, regardless of how involved they are with that process?
Some CFOs feel that they have more than others. There are some that, in a candid moment, will tell you that they're short-staffed. They don't have that level of bandwidth that they would like to be as responsive as they feel they may need to.
Are they usually right, the ones that say that? Because there's a difference between what you think you need and what you actually need.
Yeah, I think they're more right than not this time. And certainly the ability to get to data and to, with all of the focus and scrutiny, I think as much, if not more than ever, there will be a need for CFOs to feel that they're confident in their data, because that data will be questioned and scrutinized, and the covers will be taken off to look at it. So they certainly, I don't think they're wrong to feel that they're going to be stretched to the limit. In some cases, it may constrain what they do.
Mm-hmm. Linda Springer's my guest from Ernst & Young, talking about budgeting and the situation that agencies are in budget-wise, on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We'll wrap up our conversation in just a moment.
I'm like you. I watch the cherry blossoms bloom in the spring. I live amongst monuments and museums. I enjoy walks on the National Mall. Washington, D.C. is my home. This is where I found my career. I am a civilian employee of the United States Coast Guard. That's right, the Coast Guard. The Coast Guard provides me with great workplace training and excellent federal benefits. It allows me to live my life to the fullest. I have time off to travel and have flexible work hours so I can spend time with my family. Coast Guard gives me access to childcare, health and fitness programs, and first-class health insurance, life insurance, and retirement benefits. This is my career. It's how I serve. Find out more about U.S. Coast Guard positions available in D.C. and across the U.S. at CoastGuardCivilian.com/federal. That's CoastGuardCivilian.com/federal. The U.S. Coast Guard is an equal opportunity employer.
You don't have a choice of getting breast cancer. You don't have a choice of anyone getting it.
To say it was a shock is just a complete understatement. I mean, I don't think there are words.
I felt so helpless as she suffered. The 3-day was something I could do.
60 miles in 3 days. I can do that.
If I'm sure if it was 100 miles, we'd still walk it.
I think it's a very bold thing to do. It was a big statement for me of I'm alive.
We can do this.
We can do this.
We can rid the world of this terrible disease.
So that no mother,
granddaughter,
sister,
friend,
go through what my wife had to go through.
This is more than just 3 days. This is a lifetime.
Register today for the Susan G. Komen 3-Day for the Cure. Visit www.the3day.org or call 877-THE-3-DAY. That's 877-THE-3-DAY, because everyone deserves a lifetime.
Cloud computing. Your data and apps must move easily and securely to reach many clouds, not just one. That's why the network that connects, protects, and lets your data move fearlessly through the clouds means more than ever. See how. Cloud Advantage for Government. The Fed Cloud blog on federalnewsradio.com. Brought to you by Cisco and Intel.
Welcome to today's lottery drawing. And today's winning numbers are not yours, not yours, and another number that's not yours. And the final number is not yours.
When it comes to having money, don't rely on luck.
Brew your own coffee at home instead of buying that latte. Brown bag it to work instead of ordering in. Go to feedthepig.org for more free ideas on how to save.
Feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Linda Springer, a former controller at the Office of Management and Budget and former head of OPM. And I guess as we think about wrapping up our conversation today, which I always hate to do because I love having you in studio, Linda, it seems like from what you're saying, what you've said on the program today, it seems like people at the agencies are finally in... We're even beyond maybe the new normal phase where we're going, oh, this is weird. We don't know how this is going to work, and we don't know what's going to happen. There still is a fair amount of things that are unclear, but it does seem now with this guidance from OMB and with understanding where we are budget-wise and deficit-wise and debt-wise, we have at least still maybe a little bit blurry, but there's a vision for the next 5 to 10 years that maybe wasn't even obvious 6 months ago or a year ago. Is that a fair conclusion for me to draw, do you think?
I think that there is the beginning of – there's a signal, I think. There's a signal that the next 5 to 10 years are going to be different. I think it's fair to say that regardless of where you are – philosophically on these issues. I don't think that it's clear yet as others begin to weigh in and shape that vision, again, as it relates to the budget, where that final trajectory is going to go.
I think it's an opportunity, though, and you kind of alluded to this a little bit earlier, but I want to explore it a little more. It's an opportunity for somebody, whether they're a CFO at an agency or not, to be proactive and to take a leadership role that doesn't necessarily come with a title that they may or may not have and be able to say, all right, I see the trajectory. I don't know exactly where the path is going to be, but I'm going to try to get out in front of it and figure out what the right thing is for us to do as an organization, whether it's my part of an entire agency or it's the whole thing. I have an opportunity to get out in front of this a little bit and shape the future of our organization instead of just sitting here and going along and then realizing 5 years from now, well, I could have made a difference if I would have just done something.
Yeah, and you certainly hope that there in each agency there will be people who have the opportunity to catch their breath and step back and think that way. And I think that's good for the agency and for the people that work there. I also think ultimately it's going to be show good stewardship of taxpayer dollars. And hopefully we get to a place where all those things become considerations.
Yeah. As we continue to analyze this, do you foresee any kind of markers, whether they're policy markers from the administration, whether they're discussions that may take place on Capitol Hill, anything like that? Are there anything, is there anything out there that you could say, if this or that happens, that might determine where things are headed? And I'm thinking about things maybe like continuing resolutions and the discussions over them. Or if for some by some miracle we actually get some kind of budget bill in at some time in the near future. Anything like that that might shape the landscape at all? Or is it still blurry, to use a word I did before?
Well, I think that the campaign discussions will increasingly add another voice that we didn't have a year ago, certainly to that extent. The fiscal 12, the expectations for getting, you know, going beyond continuing resolutions for some period of time probably, you know, are not particularly high. The when you talk about a particular event or markers, the budget that we see delivered to the Hill in early beginning of February next year will send a very strong signal on whether or not this particular approach to the budget is going to be significantly different or if it's just going to be a matter of finding, you know, 5% here and there, or if there's really a fundamental change.
Mm-hmm. It's always great to have you in the studio. I love having you come in, and look forward to doing it again very soon.
Hope so. Thank you very much.
Linda Springer of Ernst & Young, the former controller at OMB and head of the Office of Personnel Management on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. You can hear our conversation posted online later this afternoon at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Coming up in just a few moments on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, bring you up to date on the earthquake that shook Washington, D.C. and the effect that it is having on the federal government. Some agencies are deciding to wrap up early this afternoon. We'll tell you about those right around the corner and lots more on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Also, making sure nobody's closed out of open government. That conversation right around